We've been developing this infrastructure to support his lab's analyses of genomic data. And the product of that work is this framework we're calling BioLite that I'll talk about today. I hope you find it interesting because it's really from the beginning, one of our primary goals has been to collect really what we start off calling diagnostics, but which also encompasses, I think, what you would call provenance, really keeping track of the derivation and the origin of these byproducts of analyses. So the problem that Casey's lab is facing and that many biology labs are facing is that there's been this explosion in the capabilities of sequencing technologies, both in terms of the amount of data that's collected every time you run one of these sequencers. For reference, the machine we have at Brown, this Illumina HiSeq machine, captures a quarter of a terabyte every time it runs, and it runs usually at least a couple times a month. And this is about 10 times more data than the previous machine that was at Brown that was only 2 years older than the HiSeq. So 10 times increase in 2 years, that's faster than Moore's Law, right? I mean, it's really this explosion and the amount of data that's collected. And in addition to that, it's also cheaper to sequence. So labs are increasingly accumulating more and more data sets. And then on top of that, the analyses are getting more complex. So because there's so much more data, we found that it's really important to do aggressive filtering and pruning of the data. So you only use the highest quality data, because otherwise you spend a lot of computation and you don't get better results. So these are the types of things we're discovering, and we're also realizing that ad hoc analyses, even if you're really careful about documenting what you're doing, or one-time scripts, which is kind of what Casey had in place before I started working with him, they're really not good solutions. They're not sustainable. We need to, in his lab at least, we need to start thinking more about processing sets of or collections of data sets rather than individual data sets. So there's existing solutions for dealing with workflow problems in science, right? So Taverna's a fairly kind of domain agnostic one, right? It's designed for any domain of science. Galaxy's a little more specific to biology. Both of these have rich support for provenance. Actually, just a show of hands, like how many people have heard of either one of these programs? Okay, so there's obviously some knowledge of this, these types of things in this community. I kind of classifying them as heavyweight in the sense that they're fairly complicated to install, to administrate. They've really focused on developing GUI interfaces to increase accessibility, especially for scientists who aren't very computationally naive. Those are very noble goals, but unfortunately they don't really match what Casey's lab is doing, where they're very computationally savvy already. And so they need something that's more lightweight, that kind of runs anywhere, that has less overhead, that is easily extendable through programming because they're competent programmers. So there's some solutions like that through frameworks like Rufus or PAPIUCH or Python frameworks for creating bioinformatics workflows. The problem is that those don't collect provenance at all, right? So we're trying to field a solution in this missing quadrant here where we have something that's still lightweight but that also has automated provenance capture. So to talk a little bit more about what we mean by lightweight, so again, Casey's lab is comfortable using the command line, one of our goals was to take all these existing scripts that are written in Python and really just formalize them more within this framework, and also create templates to then create other scripts for emerging analyses that he wants to do, all of this is designed to be portable and to maintain high performance. And to minimize dependencies, which if you've worked in bioinformatics a lot, you just learn to live with the fact that a researcher is going to say, I really want to use this BioPerl script that was written 5 years ago and requires all these antiquated Perl modules, right? And you have to figure out how to install them. It's a real headache. But we've tried to package stuff as much as possible, and we're very committed to supporting OS X and Linux. So what is BioLite? It's actually a Python framework, so it's a Python module you load. And then it's also a complementary set of tools we've written in C++ to address the fact that these data sets are getting large enough now that existing tools just break. They can't handle data sets larger than 4 gigabytes because they're 32-bit based, or they just can't handle, they can't load in 10 gigabytes of data in a reasonable amount of time. So we've gone and implemented a very efficient sequence IO library and made some tools for filtering and things like that. But the Python part of it is really the meat of the framework, and it allows you to quickly build out these pipelines that automate all kinds of stuff for you. And The way you think about it is dividing your workflow into stages. That's kind of our fundamental unit in the pipeline. And a stage is an increment of work that happens between checkpoints. So we do automatic checkpointing at the end of every stage so that if your script dies, you can just restart it where it was previously. And throughout this, we're automatically collecting all kinds of stuff behind the scenes. Like every time you launch an external program, it's logging the full environment that the program ran in. So now I'm done talking about the types of provenance we collect. So the resources it used, high watermark for RAM, it measures wall time, CPU time, system time, all the standard stuff you'd expect. But then it also keeps track of all the paths that were used by the tool. Stats those paths, keeps track of all the parameters that were used. We also try to keep track of the version of the program that's used, which gets a little tricky. But the idea is it's more of a forensic, so that if you go back and suspect there's something wrong with one of your analyses, you could answer the question, did I use this exact same version of this tool compiled with the same flags on the same system, that type of stuff. And then we collect all these statistics that are more user-defined and have to do with the application domain. So statistics, like biologically relevant statistics about the data sets. As you can imagine, we store all this in a relational database. It seems pretty typical, as key value pairs. And the cost for storing all this is really cheap, I should point out. Out of some runs we did a couple months ago, there's 168 runs. That's maybe 40 raw data sets that occupy 200 gigabytes. This balloons to over 2 terabytes of intermediate data as we do all these analyses. And what we're left with in our SQLite database is 70 megabytes of data, right? So it's really cheap to store this information. So there's no reason not to do it. And the other piece of BioLite is an API for accessing all that raw diagnostics information to generate reports. Let me go back and just mention. So Galaxies actually has this notion of an executable history of an analysis that was run. You can send somebody what's called a Galaxy page, and it includes all the steps, and you can actually run it. Like, you could bring it into your version of Galaxy and run it. Now, that's modulo, again, having the same version of a tool that's being called or something. We don't quite offer that level of automation, but basically, the provenance we're collecting in our diagnostics table combined with the original script that was used to run it, those together give you complete reproducibility of the analysis. The other thing we offer is this API to access the raw diagnostics and generate reports. And the convention we've been using is to actually put the reporting code in line with the analysis code in these Python scripts. So it makes it very obvious, why you're saving something in the analysis script, because you see right away how it's going to be used in a report later on. And then the other component we have that is something you don't get at all if you're doing ad hoc analyses or one-time scripts is that we can do these comparisons across data sets. We can automate an analysis across a bunch of data sets and then compare them. And that's something that's very important from the lab perspective. It may be that we have these 40 data sets and 10 of them are for this one postdoc's projects and 30 are for Casey's research or something, but we really want, from the lab perspective, want to be able to look across all of them. So what kind of reports can we generate? So one thing we've been playing around with is just basic resource profiling. So this is really helpful when you're trying to figure out computational requirements of an analysis you're doing. This plot here shows on the y-axis a high memory mark for every external tool that was called by the pipeline. And along the x-axis, it shows the wall time. And so you can quickly see what the time and memory requirements of the various stages. And then we also color code it from highest time usage to lowest. And the highest usage here is a program called Velvet, and that makes sense because it's an assembly pipeline, and Velvet is an assembler. But that's only within a single pipeline, or a single run on a single data set. We're also interested in what happens when you take the same pipeline and run it across lots of data sets. And here's a plot that shows, again, high watermark from memory. And this is really interesting because we can categorize the data into 2 different sample preparation methods, and one of them has this really nice linear prediction of how many reads came off of the sequencer versus how much memory we need to analyze them. So that makes it very easy to predict. We get the next data set off, we know how many reads it has, we know how much memory to request from the compute cluster. The other sample preparation method, not so good, right? So we have to be more conservative when we request resources for those data sets. And then finally, we have some biologically relevant diagnostics we capture, too, that help us answer questions about was sample preparation successful or not? And then that can help inform, in an iterative sense, you know, how to collect the next data set and how to sequence the next data set. So far, it's really just people at Brown who are using this. The driving force is this set of algorithms called a GALMA for de novo transcriptome assembly, and that's something being developed in Casey's lab. So we're kind of developing them hand in hand, but there is another research group is using this for a genome assembly tool, and there's a couple other projects that are starting up that are more like student projects, people exploring it. Okay, so any questions? Yep.
Could you tell us a little bit more? This sounds very good, very nice, by the way. Could you tell us a bit more about how, what did you do differently to achieve low overheads, which you call it BioLite, and at the same time the expressiveness that you were able to achieve? So, are you finding a sweet spot, or are there advantages or drawbacks to your approach?
Yeah, so it's lightweight primarily because of the C++ tools we've developed that handle a lot of the filtering operations and things. So you could implement our pipeline in something like Rufus, and they're both using Python and, you know, the sub-process module in Python to launch these tools. So in that sense, they're kind of the same overhead. I can't actually speak to, well, so Galaxy is heavier weight in the sense that it's run on a web server and it has to dispatch all of the things you want to run to like a compute cluster, for instance.
It's not so much about how much information you keep track, which usually tends to be a concern in provenance. But is it how you keep track that allows you to do efficient tracking?
Say that again.
In provenance research, we usually achieve lightweightness by tracking less information.
Oh, I see. So you're talking about like the heaviness of the provenance that's being collected. So I'd say in that sense, we're not collecting a lot of provenance. That's true. Because within a typical pipeline, there's going to be only on the order of dozens of stages, and each stage is maybe going to call like a few external programs. So you're talking about, you know, what, 1,000, 2,000 entries for a pipeline run? When I was using heavyweight and lightweight, I was talking more in terms of the computational demands of the actual programs doing the analyses.
And why did you decide to keep track of this particular information?
So it's mostly to do good science, right? I mean, this needs to be reproducible if it's going to be considered, archival. We actually do. So I didn't mention that here, but I did in the paper. So we make a clear distinction between permanent and temporary storage. And actually, I think on that slide, let me go back to the table. So of the 2 terabytes of intermediate data we generate, a terabyte of it we actually keep permanently in archival storage. The other terabyte are results that we feel aren't so important that if we needed them again, we'd just regenerate them, right? So this is the classic trade-off of space versus computation time. All right. The raw data is definitely archived. Is that what you mean? So the input to the analyses is the raw data, which is archived. And then some of the intermediate results are archived because we feel like it would be cost prohibitive to regenerate them, and that some of them are discarded. But the idea is by keeping this provenance, we now could regenerate those intermediate results. Whereas what Casey had before, if he deleted a bunch of temporary files, he may have completely forgotten how to generate those. And now if he used those results in a paper he published and somebody questioned those results, how would he regenerate it? It's lost.
Yeah.
So I should also point out that provenance database is also in persistent, you know, backed up storage.
So actually, when I still don't have a good mental model of how I use this, is the idea that I write each of my pipeline stages in Python, and then I use your framework, and I just pipe these. I basically put these together.
Yep. Right, so it's designed to use Python function decorators to indicate stage. So if you just have a collection of Python functions, you just can decorate them.
Okay.
And It also, the pipeline maintains a persistent state of data, so you can pass things between functions through
yeah,
that persistent state.
And Starflow, putting this together with Starflow would actually be really
cool. Okay, yeah, no, I haven't, and that's...
Stages, and you could probably actually do some of this stuff.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know. Yeah.
So, in principle, reproducibility is sensitive to many, many things that I presume you're probably not recording in the diagnostics.
Definitely. And we keep finding more stuff and we add it, right, as we realize, oh, we really needed to know that information. The reproducibility is really for, like, a worst-case scenario, right? We don't expect... So the way Galaxy handles it is they actually intend pages to be... So it's similar to like my experiments with Taverna. You could actually send somebody this page or this my experiment so that they could reproduce your experiment. We're not quite at that level yet. We're more at the level of, I guess I've been calling it like forensics. Like we think something's gone wrong. We're suspicious of an analysis, you know, the result of an analysis. We want to go back and figure out what happened. Okay.
Who wants everything to be completely reproducible.
Ah, okay.
So, it's actually really nice. And in principle, I can see combining this and just storing along with the diagnostics a mixed configuration, which explains packages used.
Yeah, sure.
And then you actually would be...
Right. Is there a Amazon EC2 image of Nix?
I'm sorry?
Is there an EC2 image of Nix by any chance? For Amazon EC2, like a cloud image? Yeah, because I mean, one of the constraints we're up against is we're using a compute cluster at Brown, and they're not going to install a custom operating system for us. But you know, if you're working within a virtual machine or something, that'd actually be a really interesting experiment to run. Yep. Sure.
Say you have another pipeline, you have apparently some tools that you apply for this particular use case, but if you have a particular output data product and you want to trace which of the inputs were really used in generating it, not all the inputs necessarily contribute to the output.
Ah, that's an interesting question.
Is there some infrastructure that you have or foresee?
Yeah, so we've... So most of what we've been talking about doing is just using indexing and you know, with SQL, right? So we've started talking about a tool that's similar to that, which says, if I give you the path to a file on disk, can you tell me all the runs and analyses that were run on that? So that's just a matter of doing you know, smart indexing in the SQL database. But I think the thing you're asking about is a little different. It's saying, given an analysis, tell me all the inputs that were actually relevant or used.
I mean, one example I think that people always say is some of my input data was tainted. Learn that later.
Ah, yeah.
Which one is not affected of my products that I created?
I think the tool I was just talking about would answer that question. So if you discover, like say we have a raw data file and we find out that Lumina tells us, oh, the chemistry you used to prepare that sample was completely bogus, you need to throw that data set out, then we could go to that file path, ask what analyses were run on this file, and that would tell us all of the analyses that were contaminated, yeah.
Now tell me that the original file had rat DNA tainted, I don't care about it.
You don't
get that level, right?
Yeah, the way we get around that is we don't combine DNA in a single file. I mean, you'd have to create separate files for rat.
But
I see what you're saying. You could say some of the reads are bad.
Sites.
Right, yeah, so maybe like half of the reads in this file are bad. Yeah, that's a question we can't answer. And in general, that would be very difficult. Well, you could answer it, but this gets back to how heavyweight is the provenance.
Yeah.
So for that, you'd actually have to keep provenance on the individual read IDs of all the data in the data set. And the problem is, these data sets have millions of reads, right? So that would increase your provenance load quite a bit. But that could be, that actually, yeah, that's a really interesting line of future.
The biologists we're dealing with, that's exactly the problem they have.
Okay. Yep.
So